Y'all, if you are a queer parent, and I have a feeling you might be, and you're dreaming of the ultimate family getaway, you have to check this out, y'all. Gays with Kids is hosting their fifth annual LGBTQIA+ Family Spring Break from April 2nd through April 6th, 2026. Mark that on your calendars. It is going to be the perfect mix of fun, community, and a beautiful chance to build real connections with other LGBTQIA families, like mine, because we're going to be there. We're going to be there too, and I want to see you there. This is it going to be 3 nights aboard Royal Caribbean International, cruising through the Bahamas, surrounded by other amazing queer families. If this sounds like your kind of trip, because it does for me, you're going to head to the link in the show notes to grab your spot. Oh, and don't forget to mention that you heard about it from the Queer Family Podcast. And come say hi to me when you're there. Okay, I hope to see you there. Let's get on with this show.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode and the entire year's worth of episodes is proudly brought to you by California Cryobank. Use code QUEERFAM25 for a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. Let's go make those babies and then let's talk about it. Okay.
The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
Like, what does it mean to not have a mommy? You know, like, that sounds terrifying. You talk about kids, their like greatest foundation is their parents.
Mommy. And you're right, saying, right.
Yeah, you're like this thing that is like foundationally, functionally the most important part of your life is changing. And how do you define what that means? I think even my then 2-year-old, now 4-year-old, was like, will we still use napkins at dinner? And I was like, what? And she was like, what about spoons? Do we still have spoons? And I was like, yeah, like, why would we not have spoons? But again, like the concept of mommy is like everything. That's your right. Whole world. So for all you know, you don't have a mommy. Now you don't have spoons and napkins anymore. Like, it was that like deeply and intrinsically linked to parts of their life that we had to really sit and be like every night for a while and be like, what are you feeling, you know, about this? And explain to them that we will still have our spoons and napkins will still be usable and I will still make pizza. And all of these things that you've come to learn to expect from me are all still coming at you. They're just right. Coming under a different name, you know, which right. Is hard for toddlers particularly.
Welcome, 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 y'all, to the Queer Family Podcast, season 20, I should say, of the Queer Family Podcast, the show all about family, both gay. I'm Jamie, I'm your gay host, and this is the show that highlights, celebrates, uplifts, and normalizes LGBTQIA+ families in all of our beautiful identities. And we come in many identities, and we try to cover all the bases on this here show. This episode coming at you actually is a really lovely conversation. I got to sit down with Jesse Callens. He's an author. He is a trans masculine father who birthed 4 children and who went through a transition when his children were young. And we have a really wonderful discussion just about gender roles and also speaking to your kids about transitions and changes and parenting in general. It's just, you're going to love it. It's really flips the narrative on its behind and flips it all around. And you know, I love it when we can really do that and dig in. Before I get to rolling that tape though, I want y'all to know, you've probably heard the ads that I've been playing before these episodes about this cruise that I am a media partner of and that I will be on and that y'all are invited to. Gays with Kids and Gays with Kids Academy hosts an annual spring break cruise every spring break. April 2nd is this year's coming up. April 2nd, 2026. April 2nd through the 6th. And we go to the Bahamas. We dock out of Miami, and we have a couple of days in the beautiful Bahamas, and there are all kinds of wonderful activities for queer families. So you would come with the group, including me and my family and Jose Rolone, NYC Gay Dad, and Brian Rosenberg from Gays with Kids, who I interviewed last season. It's a really great episode. If you haven't heard Brian's episode, go check it out from last season. And also Jose, I've interviewed two times. Jose was just two episodes ago, and then he was a couple seasons ago as well. So check out those episodes too. But they're going to be there with their families as well as many other queer families. This is going to be like a queer family joy on the ocean extravaganza, let's say. And I'm super excited. I have never been a passenger on a cruise ship, although I did work on a cruise ship for like 2 years. I've never been an actual passenger, so I'm really excited to be able to take advantage of all the perks that come with being on a cruise ship and all the activities that Brian Rosenberg and Gays with Kids have planned for us. So y'all, if you are interested in this and joining all of us on this cruise, you're just going to go to the link. It's in the show notes. You can find it on my link in bio and click on the thing that says, let's book this cruise. It's all in there. You'll find it. And then don't forget to tell them that I sent you, because I want to bring my community with me. A lot of the other communities are coming, but I want everybody else to come. Oh, and another sponsor of this is Mombian, Dana Rudolph, who I've also interviewed. And Mombian, Dana, has been a lesbian blogger and blogging about all things queer and all things queer families for decades, and a major, major resource for all of us. So, wonderful people. It's gonna be bomb, as the kids don't say anymore, but I do. And I wanna see you there. So, everybody go book that cruise. Let's go. Let's go take a gay cruise. Hell yeah. I can't wait, y'all. Let's get to this episode. I'm gonna have Helen and Beulah roll the tape. Helen, Beulah, can you wake up for me? They were just taking a little nap, bless their hearts. They went on a motorcycle road trip the other day, and it took a lot out of them. There are no spring chickens anymore, I'll tell you that. And I think Helen smoked a few too many cigarettes and had a few too many glasses of whiskey, to be real, to be honest. Y'all, I don't have any assistance. I'm making people up in my head. Helen and Beulah are not real. So please don't think I talk poorly about elder lesbians. I don't. I love them too. I love Helen and Beulah. Anyway, Helen, Beulah, I yell at them like they're really in the other room. There's nobody here. I'm talking to a blank wall. Helen, Beulah, could you please roll this tape for me? Thank you. Thanks so much. All right, let's get to the episode.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Hi, Jesse.
Hi.
It is wonderful to have you here in the studio. Where are you zooming in from, so to speak?
I am currently right outside of Philly, a little suburb. Yeah.
Oh, very nice. Living in a barn, you said.
Yes, I live in an old barn that somebody decided to turn into a house. So it's a little funky, but it's a lot of fun. Yeah.
That's so queer.
It is. It feels very queer.
So queer. I absolutely love it. All right. So you know what? Let's just get right into your 30-second elevator pitch, because I'm really, really excited to hear about your whole story. And I think there's a story here.
Yeah.
You got 30 seconds. Are you ready? Set, go.
I'm Jess Callens. I have 4 kids. As a trans man who knew I was trans as a kid, took a pause in the experience of exploring gender identity to make my family and build my family. And now I am an author. On top of that, I published Ollie in Between in April of this year, which is a middle grade novel. And that's kind of a modern Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, all about how much it sucks to hit puberty and get your period, all while maybe you're wondering, am I really supposed to be a woman?
Amazing. I love it. You did it. You did it in 30 seconds. So I'm impressed with you. And you got a lot in there. And you have 4 kids.
Do have Jessie. 4 kids. Yes.
Wow. Wow. All right. Yeah. So I feel like we need to take it back. You talked about kind of exploring your gender identity in your youth. Can we take it back to young Jessie figuring out who they are and then take it to the pause to have the family?
Yeah, I think I am kind of what is, I think, understood to be a kind of typical experience with transness, maybe not, you know, everyone's experience, but I did know pretty young that I did not feel like a girl or a woman. And I think it's quite easy in childhood to just not participate in gender. I mean, it's a simpler experience. And I did not have parents who pushed gender on me heavily. So they kind of got it. They were like, wear what you want. We don't really care. If you want to wear a boy swimsuit, we don't really care. I had to wear dresses for some things. And those were the moments where I was like, yeah, see, this is weird. Me, like, I'm putting on something that's like, I'm looking around at the boys in their suits. And I'm like, that seems way more interesting. And as a teenager, I discovered Lara's Playground, which was a really big resource for trans people at the time. I remember I literally just Googled, what if I don't want to be a woman? And the internet was like, oh, we have suggestions. Did you know
that's
transgender
amazing.
Is a term? And I was like, oh, fascinating. And I explored that. And it was still not talked about a ton at that time. And it was so much more about trans women and a lot of violence against trans women. I'm from Baltimore, where it wasn't uncommon to hear about trans women exclusively in the context of violent crimes and bathrooms. So it was kind of a terrifying idea. And I think my parents were a little terrified, and I didn't really, know what it meant to do any of these things. And it was inaccessible for youth. So it stayed kind of out of the realm of possibility until I got older.
Can I interrupt and ask, how old were you when you did this Google search and figured that out?
I was 12.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was very young. I think you really know, when you're that age, and especially, and this is why I picked writing a book about puberty, where I think for a lot of kids, you can disconnect from your gender, from the possibility of aging. And you're just like, well, I'm a kid now. I'm doing these things now. My body looks basically like everybody else's. And I'm not thinking a ton about what is in anyone's pants. So we're all kind of the same in this world, other than the couple of comments that you get about being a girl in a situation or whatever. And I was able to just be like, I'm not thinking about that until puberty started. At which point I was like, whoa, wait, I was intellectually aware that I was going to develop into a woman at some point, but it felt so far, until my body started doing those things, at which point I was like, okay, this isn't it. Something else needs to happen here. And then I could engage in those conversations. And luckily my parents were at least like aware that I was not experiencing gender in a typical way enough to like see that when I brought that to them.
Yay, yay, yay to good parents. So, okay. So then you were carrying on. You kind of revisited it a little later. And
I did. I revisited it in, luckily in college, I found queer community, and that supplemented it for me. I think for a lot of, like, you see a lot of trans people who, maybe transition later in life because they have been so deeply surrounded by queer community. And I think the value of being around people who also don't necessarily feel like they can blend in any social setting or that they understand generally what other people are going for in life. Like, your life plan always feels a little different when your path is not, the movie path. And didn't want to be a princess that found a prince and went and had baby. Like, that was not in my, trajectory of life. I was like, that's not it for me. So that supplemented, and I revisited it in my early 20s, around 22, at which point I found out I was pregnant. So that was sort of, I was like, I'll be a man. And my body was like, we'll make a baby.
Oh my God.
So that was how I kind of went into parenting, which was very, jarring. I thought I was going in one direction and I really flipped and went a totally, totally different direction. So the pause was less intentional than it was, I was with a partner and I'm still with a partner who I could imagine myself having a future with and raising a family with. And I always wanted kids, though I never really thought my body would be doing that. So it felt like, fine, I guess we will go down this path and see what happens.
Wow. I'll tell you what, I have done like almost 300 episodes and there have been like teeny tiny handful of accidental pregnancies because we don't really have accidents. It's a little hard for us to, but there you go.
Yes.
That's fun.
It
probably wasn't fun at the time. I can't imagine, but I want to hear about the experience, but of finding out first.
Yes. Well, finding out was mortifying because I was also a baby. Right. I was like 22 and I was like, what?
That's so young.
And it is interesting. Like as I'm in queer family spaces and like early on in having like a parenting journey, it was like, I was like, do I go into queer parenting spaces? Like, I don't know. I didn't transition at that point and didn't pursue like a social transition. I was just like, this, I need to figure everything out. Like, your whole identity really shifts when you bring kids into the picture. But I was also 22. And I think there's like a big identity shift that happens after college as you're like, how do I be an adult in this world?
Yeah.
It really disrupted that with a whole human being.
And the two of you as a couple were kind of showing up in the world as like a cisgender hetero couple.
Yeah.
Which, so which you're not.
No.
Right?
We're not. And so it was very, I mean, it was so many layers of strange. And I because I didn't transition, I'm like approaching 2 years of transition in December. I didn't transition until after kids, like at all.
Oh, wow.
It was just sort of this thing where I didn't know. I was like, what do I do? You know, how do we do that and have babies at the same time?
Like you literally got the stork dropped in your lap, so to speak. And then you went hard at it. You made three more.
And then, yeah, and then I made three more, which was an interesting side quest in the idea. It's not really a side quest. The literal production of the people. The people are very much a main quest in my life. But it did feel like this weird detour into womanhood that I was like, huh. Like, I never thought I would see that. I never thought that I would really experience pregnancy. I have always loved kids. I worked at a high school. My high school had a preschool in it, and I worked at that. I wanted to teach. Like, children were always... have always been really important to me. I think that they're like the hope and driving force for anything we want in our world. So I knew most of my life that I wanted to work with kids and that if it were possible for me, I would want a family. But I had always felt like probably a gay man. And so I was like, I don't know how you do that when you're like, you feel like a gay man and technically you could make babies. But then if you're with somebody else, maybe they can't make babies. And like none of that ever felt within the realm of possibility, you know, for me. Right. So there was like a terror when I found out I was having this baby when really I thought I was going to get this blood test to be told I could go be a man.
Oh,
and,
God.
But then I was like, huh, you know, like I am 22 and what am I gonna, like I don't know that I felt like I was missing out on something no matter what. Like if I had picked to transition, I think I was very psychically closing myself off to the possibility of being a biological parent to somebody, which is not like the most important thing in the world, but it was something, you know, in my brain that I was like, I'm saying goodbye to this. And I'm very likely and possibly saying goodbye to the possibility of an easy path to producing children.
The easy is the key right there, the easy path, right? Because, because it is possible, but also there is no, like, it's not out there. Like I've told stories on this podcast of people who've done it post-transition, but like it's not in our mainstream. There's no book. I mean, there are some books actually now, but
yes, there are now, but not definitely not 8 years ago.
No.
You know,
and no, it, right.
There's this sense too of like I was always worried, like if I wanted to adopt, like would trans people be allowed to adopt kids?
Right.
Like there's kind of this sense of like somebody else would be controlling my access. You know, being able to tend to people in my life in the way that I kind of always thought I might. I tried to reframe a little bit as I'm like, okay, here is like my chance to do this thing that I wanted to do. And I always kind of had a sense that I would want more than one kid if we, you know, if I could do that. You know, we did have two kids and then COVID hit. And I think everybody got a little bit crazy when we thought we were all going to be stuck in our houses alone for the rest of forever. So we were like, well, do we just make more people and like never leave the house? I don't really
know.
And then we did. And it's great. Like, I don't know. I feel like this is the queerest version of my life possible because it's the least comprehensible to anybody I meet now where they're like, oh, you're this small man with four children. And that doesn't seem like possible age-wise because people don't tend to read me as like almost 32, which is fair. I get
right.
it.
And
I know
still
what I
young.
Like.
Yeah. I mean, it's young for four kids, especially
yes,
in queer community.
Yeah.
Like that's young, right?
And especially when you look like, you know, gay dads coming into this space, people like the comment that I get more than anything is people go, "You're really good with them." And I'm like, "Thank you. I'm great." Or I'll be like, "Oh no, and like, you know, these are my four kids." And they go, "Your poor wife." I'm like,
"Oh my God.
Wait a second, I'm the poor wife. Don't go giving my burden on to some like imaginary lady in my house. Like that's me. I did all the growing of these people." So it's kind of interesting to navigate.
That is interesting.
Like, people love to talk about people who have a lot of kids anyway, like pre-transition when I would go to the grocery store. Like
I'm
you can't
guilty
go anywhere
of it. I just did it to you.
But it's all right. It's
just
a lot
it.
Of people.
Yeah, it is. But also I do find it fascinating that because dads are given this like, this like badge if they're like good parent, like, oh my God, you're so good with your kid. Like it's a crazy thing, but it is interesting that you get to experience that perspective.
Yeah. And I've gotten both. Like I really, because I pre-transition, I mean, I've always been like butch, you know, there was no world in which I was like a very feminine person to the point where like my partner's name is Chris. And anytime I'd go someplace and talk about my partner, Chris, pre-transition, people always assumed Chris was a woman. And so like, I was not reading even straight. People were like, we don't know, probably gay. And I was like, you're right. Yeah. But like different direction, very confusing, hard to explain. I'm a gay man. And they're like, huh, fascinating. You're pregnant. And I'm like, don't worry about it. It's really hard to convey clear. In this moment. Yeah. And so then like transitioning meant that I got to go from 6.5, 7 years of being mommy, you know, and being read as a mom socially. And then I thought, this is going to be so funny, you know, being a dad, because I'm going to be complimented all the time. But let me tell you, it's really patronizing. I kind of like,
oh,
I used to get annoyed with my partner when he'd go to the store, because every time he'd go to the store with more than one kid, or God forbid, all four kids, he'd come home with like a billion compliments. And meanwhile, when I go to the store with four kids and I was being perceived as a mom, people only told me how tired I must be and how exhausting it must be. Or they'd like tell me weird stuff, like very negatively toned. Uh-huh. It was very infrequently anybody saying, you're doing great.
Mm.
And I was thinking like when he'd come home, I'd be like, that's not fair. I want to be told I'm doing great. But the compliments that men get, I'm finding are like, in some of my dumbest moments, I get compliments. Like one time I took a toddler to the park, forgot snacks. So I bought whatever she wanted from a coffee shop, which was a container of oatmeal. And you've probably fed a 2-year-old oatmeal. And you know, I guess she was like 18 months at the time. Like she was and it's a whole sensory experience, you know. And I'm sitting at this playground and I'm like, I am truly the dumbest person in the world. Like this is in no way the right snack. Like, why did I say yes? I don't have a bib. I have some wipes. And my kid is like clumps of oatmeal, like in their hair and on that. And this like grandma aged, you know, with another toddler woman comes up to me and she's like, you are doing so good. You're look at you with that snack. And I'm like, I have never done a dumber snack in my like, I've been doing snack for 8 years now. And I am feeding an 18-month-old oatmeal on a park bench with no bib.
This is the
bottom of the barrel parenting here. And I'm getting told good job for feeding that human that you brought. And I was like, go away. Tell me I'm great other times.
Oh,
but it
so
is.
It's like, yeah, it's like low key, it's patronizing. And it's like low key, typical dad. You know what I mean? Let me go lift him up.
Let me go pat, pat, pat. And I'm like, it wouldn't matter if like, as a mom, I would have thought somebody would have been like, we've been there. We get it.
Right.
But I've been on the other side, and you hear people on playgrounds with their like little muttery judgments and whatever, like where there is so much more judgment to how much a mom can handle and what weight a mom can carry. And if, you know, a mom is following their kid around, then they're a helicopter parent. But if a dad is following their kid around doing the same thing, it's like, oh my God, they're so worried and they love that kid so much. And there's like just really the like a lot of like hypocrisy in the way that we try to lift men up, but by setting that bar so low, I'm like, these guys feel good about anything they do because everything is amazing. I mean, like, I can't, it's to the point where people think I'm hired when I'm parenting too well. They're like, someone must be paying you to do this. And I'm like, no.
You're a manny. Yeah.
Like, and that's people ask me, they're like, oh, you know, that's where I get the comment, you know, you're so good with them. And then the comment that comes after you're so good with them is, are they related? Because I think people are thinking I'm bringing these random children somewhere and maybe they're not like, it's so bad. I'm like, no,
you're like
a dad
uncle.
Can be good. Yeah. Like a dad
you're the
can
uncle.
Be a great thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It's a visceral difference. Like I walk through the earth as a totally different person with my kids, knowing that the looks that are coming and I thought it would relieve burden where I'm like, the judgment of womanhood is lifted from me now in these moments. And now I'm like, ooh, like the icky, weird weight of how little people think of men sits on me constantly as I see anything I do be perceived as so wonderful. And it's such a disservice,
wow.
I think, to these guys who, like, I mean, I don't think anyone deserves the judgment. We could do without it
no.
fully.
Yeah.
But
right.
I think it's this, the tremendous disservice
I mean, I just find this really fascinating. And I think it's actually like another case in point for why conversations like this are so important. Like there should be more podcasts like this where we just talk about stuff. Like the things you're saying are so eye-opening to me and they really flip the narrative upside down, which is what we should be doing.
I think so. I think it's easy to critique one end of it because, I mean, it is, you know, as before I had this experience being perceived as a dad, I think my view was very critical where I was like, you know, men get these comments because we don't view them as competent because they're not, you know, they're not being competent. I mean, I happen to find a pretty competent one. He's lovely. He parents well, he gets a lot of great comments and he would always express to me that he didn't feel good about them. And I was kind of like, I don't get it. What I would give to have anybody give me a compliment that didn't feel like a thinly veiled judgment or like, I mean, or anything, because you just don't get compliments. Like that's not, and you don't need them. But if someone's going to come comment on you, I would much rather be like, your kids are doing great, even if they're screaming in the grocery store aisle or, you know, something like, not like, God, you must be exhausted. I'm like, no freaking shit.
Yeah.
Like, obviously I'm tired. I have four children. We are sleepy.
Yeah.
Nobody needs to guess this, but like, you know, maybe I want these compliments. And he would bring it and I couldn't understand. Like to me, it just felt incomprehensible that somebody could receive compliments about parenting and they be received negatively until I started getting them. And I'm like, no, you're really right. Like this is what that person is looking at you in the face and saying, I would never have expected you to be able to take care of this human without, you know, all by yourself. Good boy. You know, like it's weird. It's very strange.
And what I'm hearing is it parenting sucks no matter what your gender is. Like it just is
especially
hard.
Social parenting. It's like the, just knowing that we live in a world in this moment where we aren't parenting communally. Mm-mm. And maybe there are spaces like, I mean, my kid's school is a lovely space for more communal parenting where people are like very low judgment, but it's a very small group of people. But otherwise, I mean, you're raising kids in this world. And I think in this very individualist moment, in this very individualist country, parenting started to get so competitive that we started looking at other parents and like sizing ourselves up and being like, am I doing better?
Yeah.
Rather than being like, gosh, we're in this really hard, trying moment together. Let's just like all do it in the space and time together.
Yeah, interesting. And you know what, to your point, like it's hard to not be suspicious of people's comments because of this world we're living in. Like I will see a mother struggling in a grocery store and the baby's screaming and she can't appease them. You know, I'll see it and I want to go over and be like, you're doing a good job, mom. You got this. You got, because I've been there. I know what it's like. Yeah. It's the hardest thing in the whole world. And I have at times gone over to moms and been, I see you. But it's not taken right. Like a lot of times the mother will think that I'm judging, right?
Yeah.
And I know that I've been on the receiving end of it thinking, why are they coming over here? Why are they judging me right now? Like I don't need that on top of it, right? So it is, it's tricky. It's hard. And I think it is exactly what you describe. It's this world where we're parenting in has become so individualistic and competitive.
It is.
So take out the competition. Let's just go with communal queer love. Let's go.
Exactly. Like the queer parenting people, anytime I talk about queer parenting, I'm like, it's not just about who you are as parents. It's about how you raise your people. I've met some queer parents who are queer in their relationship, but raise their parents in a very, very, or raise their parents, raise their children in a very heteronormative way, which is totally, you do whatever you want with your kids. But I'm like, I think, I mean, also with four kids, you parent a little bit differently. You don't have that same intensity of attention to give to kids. You can't really like inundate your kids with activity or, you know, whatever it is that is kind of the modern way of doing things, which is fine. But for me, I was just like, I have to raise these people as like a collective of individuals. They're roommates in this space. It's not just like, I can't just build people to send into the world right now because I also don't know what the world is right now for them to go into.
Yeah.
And so it's like, what if, you know, you raise kids to know that your front door is mostly open and you can invite, you know, friends and people into your house whenever you want, that hanging out with people doesn't mean going and doing something crazy and elaborate, because it takes a lot to get six people together to go out. And some activities just aren't worth it. Like an amusement park is really not worth it with four kids, because most of the time is spent trying to figure out what to do with your time. And saying, you know, hanging out like a play date might be, the door is open, I have things that I need to do, you bring your kids over, we will like kind of switch off being the main supervisor of kids, and we'll do it a little bit together, and then we'll have dinner all together, and we will have gotten through a day.
Yeah. And it's so much better when you do it together.
Yeah. And that just, and like parenting in community and parenting in service of other people, like offering, like, God, what I would give to be able to walk up to that person with the screaming baby in the store and be like, I have no children with me in the store.
Let me help you.
I will literally
out.
Hold this baby for you. Like, I mean, another thing about being a man is you can do those things a lot less, which is like a little awkward. I'll find myself like smiling and like talking to some kid going by, and you can kind of see the parents are like, why is that boy talking to our child?
Yeah.
And I'll be like, oh, yes. I'm like perceived as a man now talking to kids, which is like a little different than being perceived as a mom talking to kids. But like, if we lived in a world that was like that, that was like, are you, you know, you have a 3-month-old and you're fed up of putting that, you know, putting that kid to bed. You are tired. You need to shower. You need to light a candle. You need to take some deep breaths and not hear your baby screaming. Like, where is that person out of that baby phase who will come over and just hold your screaming baby and love every second of it? Because when it's not your baby and it's screaming at night, you're just like, gosh, you're having such a hard time. Like, that's really unfortunate for you. And I could sit and tolerate somebody else's kid screaming to eternity because it doesn't like rock
it's
your insides the way that your baby screams.
Mm-hmm.
Like that to me is like, that is like queering the world of parenting is, you know, a little bit of sacrifice, a little bit of service, but being together and being imperfectly together, which I think there's a big hesitance to do right now. People want to bring you their kid when their kid's on their best behavior.
Right.
People want to, you know, won't come over if their kid has woken up and is super cranky. And I'm like, bring your cranky kid to my house.
Yeah.
Let them dump everything out in my playroom. I truly like be your imperfect self in my space, please. Or I will go over and then your grumpy kid can sit in their room and be grumpy. I don't know, whatever a grumpy kid wants to do. Like it's not going to ruin my time. But it is that sense of judgment. And the lack of intrinsic community that I think it's really damaging. And I didn't realize how damaging until I did this big social shift, because I was like, God, it just sucks for all of us. What is this? Who is this benefiting? Like, no one feels good here. The men feel like they're predators, and the women feel like they're, you know, utilized and kind of have to be a martyr in order to be considered successful. And anyone of any, you know, not necessarily binary parenting orientation feels like they can be no things because it's impossible to be acknowledged. So like, God, if we could just sit together, assess that like our struggles are the same. We are just trying to raise humans. We could support each other. That would be like the best.
No, I hear you. And I heard like Jesse really. And I think you know, that's a call to action to all of us to just work on building out our communities. The more community you have, the better. They don't have to be queer. They can be straight too.
They can be. I find some are willing.
It's better if they're queer. I'm just kidding. I have a bunch of straight mom friends who are going to listen and be like, are you kidding me? Like, you know, I have a lot of straight friends.
I have straight friends too. But then I feel like also don't forget to bring in your queer single folk, because that's, I'm finding the queer people in their 30s and in their 40s who, you know, either, you know, don't have kids by choice, or that's just, you know, not the path that whatever, for whatever reason, they don't have kids. And finding there's a willingness for these people to sit in the lives too of people who have kids. And whether that's like, again, just join us for this thing we're doing. Don't necessarily, you're not like babysit my kids, but just come hang out in my house. That engagement, I think building out like the diversity of community too. I don't know what you feel in your experience with parenting, but like a lot of people my age, once kids are in the picture, they're kind of like, oh, I don't know what to do, you know, and there was a big disengage in the baby phase. And I'm finding people like a little more open to re-engagement where they're like, all like, I'm losing all of these friends to family and kids. And I'm sort of like, are you losing them? Or like, is it your willingness to engage too? And I'm finding it's like both ways. Like the parents are like, well, why would I invite my single or childless friends to do this thing, because why would they want to deal with my kids? And then, you know, the other, you know, parties being kind of like, well, they're so busy, you know, they don't, we're not included in anything. And I think we then mutually start to exclude one another from everything under the assumption that that person can't or doesn't want to or won't be interested in or whatever. And when those invitations stop, then you end up with these very like singular spaces of, you know, just mommies and toddlers, boom.
Right.
And then you're stuck there and you're like, wait, yeah, where'd everyone go?
Right. So keep the community going. Keep the community going. We'll be right back.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Y'all, since we're talking about baby making and all the things that go with it, I think it's a wonderful time to share my promo code with California Cryobank. It's QueerFam25, and it's going to get you a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. So if you need help in the sperm department, this is the promo code for you. And if you really are ready to start making that family, this is the promo code for you. California Cryobank has been around for over 45 years, and they love us LGBTQIA plus folks. I love them. I made my babies through California Cryobank, and I don't regret a single thing. They do wonderful things for our community. They offer 500 sperm donors from hundreds of ethnic backgrounds. They offer DNA advantage donors, which means they are screened for 260 plus genetic conditions. They really do the work. And they also offer wonderful resources for the LGBTQIA community. They think about us. So if you're ready to start making that family, what you're going to do is head to cryobank.com and you're going to use code QueerFam25. That's QUEERFAM25. And that's going to get you a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. You can also use that code for a discount on a level 3 subscription, which gives you even more information about the donors. And the more information you get, the better, in my opinion. So go use the code, make the babies, and then, of course, come talk to me about them. Because you know I love a good baby-making story if it's done with gay. Okay, here we go. Let's get back to the episode.
You know that feeling when your day finally slows down? And you just want to relax, unplug, and feel good? That's where Mood.com comes in. They're changing the game, delivering legal THC products right to your door, no shady dealers, and absolutely no medical card required, just good vibes and better sleep, shipped straight from their farm to your couch. From delicious THC gummies, smooth vape pens, to premium THC flower, Mood has it all, and everything's federally legal under the 2018 Farm Bill. Yeah, this isn't some loophole. It's the real deal. Head to Mood.com and use code FIRST20 for 20% off your first order. That's MOOD.com. Find your mood.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Emoji moment from Sadie, who writes, I'm not crying, you're crying. This is what I said during my first appointment with my physician at Mochi, because I didn't have to convince him I needed a GLP-1. He understood, and I felt supported, not judged. I came for the weight loss and stayed for the empathy. Thanks, Sadie. I'm Myra Amit, founder of Mochi Health. To find your Mochi moment, visit joinmochi.com.
Sadie is a Mochi member compensated for her story.
Love is love.
I want to ask about when you transitioned. Your kids were, how old were your kids?
So I transitioned right around Christmas 2 years ago. So my kids were, my one kid was turning 7. And so then I had a 4-year-old, a 2-year-old, and a 1-year-old.
Up to that point, they had been calling you mommy?
They had been calling me mommy. And there was a period after I had kids that I thought, in the way that maybe many people reassess their identities shortly after having kids, I was like, maybe this is fine. Just because to me, I felt like my gender had a lot to do with my relationships with people and my perception, like how other people would perceive me. And I was like, I don't know. Like I know that something's, this isn't obviously in hindsight was not the right answer, but I was like, you know, maybe this is enough of an identity for me. Like, mommy is such an all-consuming identity. Like, especially early on, you know, your job is to keep the small person alive. And that in its own, you're like, everything you do, you breathe around that child. Like, you shower, you sleep, you pee, you sit in uncomfortable positions, because for that first kid, you're like, I can't move. They'll never sleep or something. And, you know, but like, and so to me, I was like, I don't know, like maybe forever I will just be mommy in the little isolated space of having this kid. And I was young enough and kind of queer enough looking that people also didn't perceive me as the mom of my child for the first like year of her life. I was very much assumed to be the babysitter by a lot of people. So I didn't get a lot of those mommy conversations early on either, where I was like, people just don't know what to make of me. This is great. I'm confusing in that, you know, deeply queer way. I just always enjoyed the idea of me confusing. So I was like, great, I'll be a confusing mommy. Yeah. You don't know what that means, but maybe it'll work. And it did not. But I thought, I was like, I'm going to commit to it because maybe it works and maybe it's simpler. And in my political mind, I was like, Donald Trump had just become president before I had my first kid. And I was like, well, maybe you can make this work. Like, I don't know.
That's tough though.
So yeah, I was mommy and we had to transition everything over from that. And again, luckily for my kids, they had always seen me as me. I have always presented. I mean, I didn't get like a new wardrobe or a new haircut.
And, yeah, yeah.
You know, yeah. Like I was still fundamentally kind of who they knew I knew me to be. It was my body that changed. And then it was my name that changed, which was very hard for my kids. To go from having a mommy, and I go by Baba to my kids. There were a lot of conversations which were unexpectedly like, if we don't have a mommy anymore, who is going to, you know, take us to the park and do things? And I would just be like, what do you mean? Like, that's still me. And they were like, but you were our mommy and you stayed home with us. And so are you going to like do like different things during the day now? And I think that's mostly because we have a lot of working dads and a lot of staying at home moms.
And the gender binary is strong.
Yeah. And I mean, no matter what conversations you have with your kid, they're still seeing what's modeled in their world. I can't change the way that the world is. And obviously we appeared in a certain way too, that I was home with the kids and my partner worked.
Yeah.
And at the time I was in grad school and I had a career, but my career has very, you know, loose hours because I can write whenever I need to write. And there were just a lot of things about like who is going to make cakes for our birthdays, because that's my thing. I like to make cakes with my kids. And I was like, well, that's not a mommy thing. That's a me thing. And I'm just called mommy, you know, like, and no longer. But at that, so it was one of those, like, I had to go through a lot of interesting phases of them processing, but like what it means to not have a mommy, like just the word mommy.
So they all had to transition too into.
They did.
I mean, same you. But
yeah,
I guess like grappling with the ideas surrounding, which is interesting.
Yeah. Like, what does it mean to not have a mommy? You know, like that sounds terrifying. You talk about kids, their like greatest foundation is their parents.
Mommy. And you're saying,
yeah, you're like this thing that is like foundationally, functionally, the most important part of your life is changing. And how do you define what that means? I think even my then 2-year-old, now 4-year-old was like, will we still use napkins at dinner? And I was like, what? and she was like, what about spoons? Do we still have spoons? And I was like, yeah, like, why would we not have spoons? But again, like the concept of mommy is like everything. That's your whole world. So for all you know, you don't have a mommy. Now you don't have spoons and napkins anymore. Like it was that like deeply and intrinsically linked to parts of their life that we had to really sit and be like, every night for a while and be like, what are you feeling, you know, about this? And explain to them that we will still have our spoons and napkins will still be usable and I will still make pizza. And all of these things that you've come to learn to expect from me are all still coming at you. They're just coming under a different name, you know, which is hard for toddlers particularly
to grasp. Yeah.
And my 2-year-old would cry, like she would scream in the car and be like, I want my mommy, you know? And I'd be like, still me.
Yeah. Because in that tiny brain, mommy's leaving.
Yeah.
And you can't, differentiate the two ideas, right? It is really interesting. But you were intentional about it and you got through. And I feel like you need to make a book about this, like a children's book.
I'm working on a picture book that's called Things That Stay the Same. That is what it means to have a parent transition and what it doesn't mean, you know, which is...
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I love this.
And so that hopefully will be something out and available in the future, because I didn't love all of the... Like, there are a lot of lovely books out there, but none of them hit that for me where I was like, my kids were great actually about the name itself and the pronouns. They didn't need a lot of help with that because it's such an abstract concept for kids. You're like, yeah, I know that you were calling me she, her, but like, this is what I'm doing. I'm transitioning. My body has the, you know, hormones in it that, you know, are in what we come to assume like a male body would have. And so I will begin to look more and more like what you, you know, think of when you think of a boy. So like that change is going to happen. And they were kind of like, great, you don't care. We'll call you whatever you want. Like one of my kids decided she was going to change her name around then too. And I was like, well, I guess I have to do that.
I guess
because
so.
It'd be a weird expectation. So we have, you know, 7 months strong of my one kid going by a different name. And it just, but like, I think they were, that part was so simple for them to get. They didn't care. We, again, are in such a queer household that I think they were like, whatever, we'll call you he, him. And Baba is great. And they did it. And it was really just like, I swear it was like 2 months before they had just fully flipped that switch. And it was just the security and the stability of like conceptually what is actually changing.
Interesting.
Which is really hard for little kids to get because it is so abstract. Like I couldn't even tell you specifically what was changing. I'm like, socially things are different. Like I am personally the same, but when you're happier and embodied, you are a little bit different. It's so abstract even to go through it and to experience those changes.
But the simplicity of a toddler's brain grappling with it kind of really does like bring it down to its like tiniest nugget. And it does make it easier to understand in a way.
It does. I'm like, you're right. I'm really not changing. Like it's not nothing changes except for like my ability to be seen in the world and to see myself as the person who I am. And that doesn't impact a ton what I'm putting back into the world other than the energy that I have to give, because I'm not spending it, you know, on my mental health every day.
Yeah. But I'm still going to be the one to bake you cakes, and I'm still going to be the one that takes you to the playground, and I'm still going to be the one who's at home, right? Like, it really does simplify it, but it's so complicated. It's really interesting.
It is. It's fascinating.
You need to write that book.
Yes. There's a draft out there.
Good. Speaking of books, let's talk about the book that just came out.
Yes, I have it. This is Holly in Between. It is a middle grade novel. It came out with Fiol and Friends, which is Macmillan, in April. And it's a book that came from, I was in my MFA program writing this book, and I was taking a class on middle grade writing, which is writing for kids typically between 8 and 12, which is a little bit of a hard category to write for, because as an author, you're writing characters of a certain age, usually for children a couple years younger, right? Because kids always want to read about kids older. A little older. Right. So you have YA, which is easy, and you usually have 13, 14, 15-year-olds reading about 16, 17, 18-year-olds. And then that's also a very accessible genre for truly anybody. And then you have the early reader, which is, you know, usually kids reading a year or two ahead in age of character. But when you have middle grade, it's very hard to write, say, an 11 or 12-year-old, because who wants to read that? Probably a 9 or 10-year-old, and the content that a 9 or 10-year-old is going to be given access to may not necessarily feel like the content your 11, 12, 13-year-old is going through.
Like that, the reality of
yeah,
you know, it's a big
puberty
change.
Of like just the conversations, and we're seeing this in our political climate as well, these conversations about what is sexual content, which I'm having a lot of trouble with my book being removed from places and banned from places because there's sexual content in it. And I knew when I wrote what I wrote that I was also pushing that a little bit, because there is a lot of explicit naming of genitals, or there is a lot of questioning about sex ed curriculum and who it's serving and whether it's actually, you know, talking about the sexual health of people, or if it's just kind of fear mongering meant to keep us away from anything that we want. And I remember being 11, 12, 13, and adults are so much more transparent than they think they are. And an adult trying to give you just the right information about sex as an adult telling you, a teenager or a pre-teenager, there's so much more I'm not saying. And that's the only thing that kids tend to process and internalize at that age. I come to find as I listen to them talk, and I did a lot of interviews with teenagers and preteens and young adults and adults and people, like, just, I talked to a lot of AFAB people who would have experienced this kind of puberty, about their experiences with puberty and sex and their bodies and what it means, you know, what womanhood felt like to them when they were younger versus now. Because I was convinced, I was like, maybe there's someone out there who hit puberty and was like, yeah, this is so good. I am the cool girl. I don't know what that feels like, but I'm like, somebody had to. Like, I definitely, and I even messaged people who were that to me in high school, where I was like, right. You are the definition of a woman. Like, you're right. Going to do it right. And I was like, this is weird, but I'm doing this research. Like, would you talk to me? And they did. And none of these people felt good.
Right.
Womanhood or femininity. And there was this pervasive sense of inadequacy and looking behind you and looking at the next better person and saying that person's doing it better than me. And I didn't talk to anyone who was like, yeah, I felt very secure in my femininity. You know, like I was feminine and happy about it. And I didn't, you know, I felt like I was being interacted with the way that I wanted, or that I was successful in my approach to womanhood, particularly at that terrible age of 12, 13, 14. And so it felt to me, I was like, God, the opportunity that could exist at that age for people to be like, we are all confused, would be lovely. And I wasn't sure how to make that happen. So I was like, I'll write a book instead about somebody else, this other kid who knows for sure that they're not meant to hit puberty and become a woman, but they're heading down that path no matter what. They're not in an aggressively hostile space, like their parents are not aggressively homophobic or anything, but there is a sense of that internal danger that comes with knowing you're different. And I just wanted to send them through this experience of like trying to define womanhood. And how do you do that? How do you look around at what you consider to be a successful woman and talk to them, and then through your conversations, define womanhood in a way that you could then mimic, which is my character's goal, is to camouflage in this world, but they don't know how. So they're like, right. They're like, let me write a list of all the things I need to do to mask appropriately. And they do that through these interviews for their health class. And it was a lot of fun to write. It was a little stressful to write. I was like, gosh, 12-year-old me needs a little bit of a hug from time to time.
Oh, yeah.
And doing this publishing process, I had two kids, like through writing this, the revisions for this book, because I wrote it in 2020, the first draft I wrote in 2020 over the summer. And then I got an agent in January of 2021. So it was a very quick process, but my kid was born summer 2020 and my other kid was born fall of 2021. And then this book came out this year. So all of this process was happening like while I was having kids and then transitioning. And so it was I feel like it really carried me into a different phase of life, which was just kind of lovely.
Yeah, it's amazing. And it's great that that publishers are publishing books like this, right? This is great.
And they're not backing down. They're not.
Good.
If I could extend any message of hope, it would be that even whatever is going on, like politically in like the world of elites and people who have power, which sucks, and we wish that it wasn't happening. I think on the like human level, these are stories people want to hear. Queerness is not being erased at the human level. You know, like the gatekeepers to the media world are all also pretty queer.
Yeah.
We filled the publishing and TV industry with queer people. And now queerness is so much more mainstream. I mean, you almost certainly remember, like, you'd look at Netflix for a show, and if there was a gay character in it, it would say, it'd be like, and homosexual friend, right. Blah, blah, blah. And you're like, oh, homosexual friend, we love that.
Yeah, it's more, but I feel like there still needs to be more, like, you know, definitely.
For sure. But like, I never would have imagined like being jump scared into like queerness in shows. Right. Like now I'm just watching a regular show and I'm like, gay people.
Yeah.
We're just here. Like, actually, this is a very gay show. Nobody even told me. Like, it wasn't like queer people were like, go check out this new gay show. And And that to me is like the baffling thing of being able to open a book and being like, oh, I didn't know this was gay. I don't think I ever would have had that experience even 8 years ago. You know, like if it was gay, it was marketed gay. And you really wouldn't stumble upon it.
The tide is turning a bit. It needs to happen a lot more. But I hear you. Yes. And I really love that, to hear that the publishers are like not backing down and they're doing this. That's great.
I mean, they want these books.
Good. So keep making them. And I feel like I know a lot of adults who need to read this book.
Well, they can. They can do that. Go to your local indie bookstore if you have one.
Okay. Yeah. So tell everybody where they can find your book and you, if you want.
You can find me on Instagram. It's really the only place that I am. I'm at Jess Callens, but okay, I'm also Jess not Callens. Very on there.
Yeah. So, you know, get the book and you can support Jess that way. And say the title of the book one more time so everybody hears it nice and clear. And it'll be in the show notes too.
Yeah. It's Ollie in Between.
Ollie in Between.
It's lovely. And I have it's a Persian character. And so we did a lot of care to like have facial hair and arm hair and body hair, because that was I'm like a quarter Iranian, but I got the full hair genes and I was a very hairy kid. So I was like, please make this child hairy, like the way that a
in the
kid
illustration.
Would be hairy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm Irish, like a, German, and I'm hairy too, but
we need more hairy kids in books. I'm like, some of us are just hairy. Like, let's show it. Let's not rip it all off.
Let's normalize it. Let's normalize it.
Yeah.
I love it. This has been such a great conversation. And I am excited to read your book. And maybe my daughter's going to read it too, if I can get her to read a book.
Not always easy.
Yeah, no, not always easy. But this has been wonderful. And I am so appreciative of you for coming on and sharing your story.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And also, I think you're going to be kind of doing a little like book recommendation in our newsletter here and there. So everybody needs to be on the lookout for that, because I don't have the time to read lately. And so Jesse's going to help me find all the queer books that we should all be reading.
I'll do that. I'll probably give you mostly children's books, but the value of a queer children's book,
the best.
Deeply healing. Yeah, deeply. I would say reading middle grade and young adult. Middle grade, the unexpected, like unsung hero. It really, like, I think we all need to hug our inner 12-year-old more than we do. Very moody though. So we like sometimes don't want to do that, but read middle grade and hug your inner 12-year-old.
Okay. I love this. So everybody, if you're not subscribed to the newsletter yet, you got to go to Queer Family Podcast and click that subscribe button so that everybody can get Jesse's book recommendations. I'm excited. All right. This has been fantastic. Thank you so much, Jesse.
Yeah, thank you as well.
Queer Family Podcast.
A special thank you once again to California Cryobank for being a sponsor of this episode. Use code QueerFam25 for a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. And tune in next week for another amazing episode of Queer Family Goodness.
Love is love.
Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is. And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier, you're going to join, and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Mwah.
Are you the one keeping everything together in your family, but maybe you're secretly or not so secretly falling apart?
Dude, you are not alone. We have been there too.
I'm Joanne.
And I'm Bree, and we're the hosts of the No Guilt Mom podcast.
If your to-do list never ends, your kids depend on you for everything, and you're constantly putting your own needs last.
Or if you're the go-to parent, but you're starting to feel burnt out and resentful, we're here to help.
Each week, we give you practical strategies from parenting and psychology experts and from our own real mom experience to help you take back time, energy, and joy.
So you can stop feeling like you're the family martyr and start leading as a confident, guilt-free role model.
Subscribe to the No Guilt Mom podcast and let's help you ditch the overwhelm and actually enjoy your family again.
Listen now wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Are you moving through adolescence with your kiddo, navigating the fear and worry that comes with this season of parenting? The Joyful Courage podcast for parents of teens is what you've been searching for. Real conversations about real challenges. Lying, screens, school, risky behavior, I cover it all. My name is Casey O'Rourke. I'm a positive discipline lead trainer and parent coach. I put shows out each week that reframe the messy terrain of the teen years and leave listeners feeling seen and hopeful. Check out Joyful Courage wherever you listen to podcasts.